FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That's a great goal!
Cahill, it's his day!
I can't spell tech, Ronaldo! You just cannot write scripts like this.
FNR News, with George Danikian and Louise Tapper on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good afternoon. It's that time of the day. It's the news hour on FNR, Football Nation Radio. George Danikian with you, along with Louise Tapper. Good afternoon, Louise.
Hi, George. How are we?
I'm not too bad, but have you managed to take a breath yet with all the news that's been breaking?
No, it's been a full-on day, George, gone from one thing to the next.
Okay, we'll find out what the headlines are in just a moment. But if you want to know, or in fact, if you want to reach out to us, we're taking your calls on 0399 44 9999. That's 0399 44 9999 to tell us what you think about some of the news that's making headlines. Our SMS number is 0428 933 345, and you can always tweet at FNR_radio. And we have a magnificent prize, a little incentive for you, a fantastic panettone, fruit panettone, butter enriched by Ital, the people who know how to deliver very special festive cheer. And that's from us and Ital to you on FNR. All right, time for the headlines.
Well, the big news of the day has no doubt been the departure of Tim Cahill from Melbourne City. We'll be talking to journos Dave Davutovic in Melbourne and also Tim Smithies in Sydney. And, George, I can tell you already one club has reached out to claim him.
Well, it didn't take long, did it?
Oh, not at all.
Yep.
We'll talk to the former chairman of Melbourne Victory to discuss the impending departure of their CEO, Ian Robson.
Yes, he leaves December 22, we're told.
And the Asian Champions League draw takes place tonight at 7:30 p.m.
Okay, so important time, and more importantly, we need to know who they're playing and where.
That's it.
And of course, the dates.
You're talking about Melbourne Victory, Sydney FC, and also Brisbane Roar.
So exciting times.
Through the playoffs.
Okay. So the big news, let's start.
George, as I mentioned, the big news out of Melbourne City this morning is that the club and Tim Cahill have agreed to part ways effective immediately. Well, we're going to cross live to the Herald Sun journo, Dave Davutovic. Dave, thanks so much for joining us on the...
Is he there?
Oh, he's not here yet? Okay, well, that's all right. Well, okay. We'll keep going on, and we'll go on to talk about Tim Cahill's era.
Yeah, why not? It started at, I think it was August 2016.
That's
Tim
it.
Cahill signed with Melbourne City. And let's just take you back to that time, and just to get a sense of what it meant and how much energy was involved at that time, August 2016.
It's an exciting moment for myself especially. It's been 19 years. Also, since I've been back to Australia properly and actually going to play football, but had a good training session. It was nice to have a kick around after 4 weeks and get a good blow. And I think it was really important to meet my teammates first before doing the press conference. And I'm excited for big things here. So I'm happy to be part of the Melbourne City team and back in the A-League. It feels good. I know it's the right decision. I knew it was the right decision months ago. When we were talking, and I think overall, for myself personally, it's a right decision as a footballer as well. And I'm looking forward to it because I think as a footballer, you know, sometimes you can, you know, probably stay in China and coast through it. But I think this is going to give me a good challenge as well personally. You know, I think I've always been that player that needs that bit of pressure and needs that next kick. And I think here with the professional setup and the way it is, I know regardless of what's going to happen after Melbourne City, my total focus is to make this club the best it can be and to make the players around me better. And I know it's going to help me as a national team player and move forward to that. But it's a great feeling. You know, I didn't know I could feel like this again as a footballer, but it's very special.
The voice of Tim Cale telling us how he felt back in August of 2016. And he was talking about, already he was talking about his next kick. And the Socceroo quickly marked his arrival at the club with that next kick. He scored on his debut in the Melbourne derby, no less, at Etihad. And it wasn't just any goal. A half volley from all of 35 metres. The wonder strike, later judged the A-League goal of the year for 2016-2017.
Whoa! Oh, my words! What a hit! And would you credit it? It's Timmy Cahill. You just knew he would, didn't you, in this game? Another little landmark for Australia's greatest ever goal scorer. A first ever domestic league goal at the age of 36. The Socceroos great announcing his arrival in some style. What a goal!
And what a way to announce yourself,
yeah,
George.
No doubt about it.
Well, he went on to score another 12 times for the club, and he famously netted the winning goal in the November 2016 Westfield FFA Cup final.
About a year ago. Wow.
Standing inside the six-yard box, they work it back to the top of the Peltieri instead. Franich to go deep. Cahill! Had to be, didn't it? Timmy Cahill! Scoring in the cup final, and is he about to take possession of a first winner's medal at club level at the grand old age of 36? So many times in so many big games,
it's special. I think you know, I said to the lads before the game that you know, some people don't get this chance again. You know, I'm talking about the staff, I'm talking about the kit men, physios, everyone that works at the club, and how much it means to everyone as a group. It's a big moment for us, and you know, it's hard, because when you see this and you can feel it from months ago from talking to the guys and what you're going to do and how you're going to bring it into fruition, for it to happen like this, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, thing is, I find it very hard to take individual medals because I'm a team player. At Everton, when we finished fourth, or when we lost with Millwall against Manchester United, then I lost with Everton against Chelsea. Yeah, the best thing about this club, and what I say to the boys, it's not nice when you can't share it. And tonight we get to share this with everyone. I'm talking everyone.
Tim Cahill talking about sharing the experience and sharing the trophy. It was the first bit of silverware for the men's team at Melbourne City. It was the FFA Cup final. And they took home the major trophy and the major prize. And, you know, I'm just wondering if there he gave us a sense of what was about to happen, you know, as the season, the new A-League season would open, and that long, long campaign that the Socceroos went on, 22 games, you know, so many hours, so many challenges, and they finally got there. And I think a few weeks ago, this journey at Melbourne City maybe started to just come to a natural end, because the minute the Socceroos qualified for Russia, yeah, and everyone knew that the team were going to be part of the biggest tournament in the world. And then, in fact, there was another shot at the big time, at the biggest tournament for someone like Tim Cahill. I think things started to change. There was a new imperative, getting himself prepared as best as possible to make himself available for the Socceroos. And not only that, he gave us an inkling that something was about to change, or indeed changing, when he said this right after Australia's famous victory against Honduras.
You know, for me now, I've got to make some big decisions on, you know, the level of where I'm playing at and what I'm going to do. But we'll just enjoy this for now, because I need game time. And this is all I wanted. I knew it was going to happen. It's only a matter of time. So, yeah, I can't wait, because I'm excited for the future.
Tim Cahill.
Yeah, and I mean, George, the seeds of that decision soon put him on a bit of a collision course with his new City coach, Warren Joyce, who has a different agenda for Tim.
As far as I'm concerned, it's you saying that. I've not actually heard that from Timmy himself. You know, he's club captain and part of the leadership group.
Are you concerned that he won't be at the club going forward if he doesn't get what he wants?
Those sort of conversations are probably for me and Timmy to have, really. You know, that's not something that you'd talk about here and now, because you're only telling me something that I didn't even know about until I walked in the building, and that's the truth this morning.
How soon does that conversation with Tim happen?
Well, today, really. You know, we'll see him today, so we'll have a chat today.
Well, clearly that conversation did take place, and things, as they say, were cleared. The air was cleared between both parties, namely the Melbourne City Football Club and Tim Cahill. And as we've heard this morning, he's parted ways, and that departure is effective immediately.
And commenting on Tim Cahill's time at Melbourne City, CEO Scott Munn says Tim has been a part of Melbourne City during a significant period in its history, scoring the winning goal in the FFA Cup final and contributing 13 goals in his first season in the A-League. He went on to say, we are grateful for his professionalism, leadership and mentorship of the playing group, particularly with the younger players, to whom he has been a great source of inspiration and learning. Everyone at Melbourne City wishes Tim the best of luck for the future, and thanks to him for his contribution to the club and to the Australian game. That was CEO Scott Munn.
Yeah, we then heard from Tim Cahill, who said that playing in the domestic league in Australia was always an important career move for him, and an experience that has fulfilled him from the start to the finish. The welcome from fans, the quality of the facilities, and of course the ever-increasing quality of football continues to be a real source of immense pride for him. He went on to say he wanted to thank Melbourne City, the players, the staff, and especially the fans. It was amazing to help bring the first piece of silverware to the club, and this has made me very proud. My experience here has been great, and I've enjoyed contributing to the culture inside the club, then being asked to take on a leadership role, and most importantly, being able to mentor a whole lot of the younger players, something I will continue to do in the future. I wish the club, the head coach, the players, and all the fans the very best for the rest of the season. It's never easy to say goodbye, but it was absolutely great to win last weekend and make a contribution, and also to have the club sitting third in the league. Qualifying for the World Cup has been a great adventure, and it would be a massive honour to represent my country in Russia. That will be my focus in the coming months. And they're the words that resonate. That's the statement from Tim Cahill.
And finally, we heard from head coach of Melbourne City, Warren Joyce, and he said, having players of Tim's stature in the dressing room can only help develop a squad's ambitions, and his impact on the team and for the club is well known, particularly with the younger players in the squad. In the period that I've worked with Tim, I have appreciated the contribution he's made both on and off the field, and the dedication he has shown in training. We all wish him the very best on the next stage of his career. That was Warren Joyce.
Yeah, Warren Joyce. And interesting now, that stature, that experience, that voice is gone from the dressing room.
Yeah. And also, as they all mentioned, the fact that he's been mentoring the younger players and being such a big part of helping them move on, George, in their
careers. Will be his legacy, won't it? At the end of the day, the next generation of City players, those younger ones especially that you've seen playing some fabulous football,
yeah.
If some of Timmy Cahill's fight and excellence and preparation seeps through, that'll be a win-win-win, won't it?
I mean, it's not just bound to one club. Like, you would see it on the pitch. He would do it in A-League matches, as we saw to the young Keegan Smith goalkeeper after the match.
Correct. Yeah. He went and mentored and spoke to the young man, gave him a bit of a G-up and said, oh, well done, 7 foot tall.
And there's been more. So
speaking of voices, David Davidovich, who promised to come on and join us, is on the line. David Davidovich, another big story for you.
Good afternoon, guys. Never a dull moment in football, is there?
That's for sure.
Where do we start? Well, why now?
Well, the writing was on the wall after he came out post Honduras and hinted very strongly that he wasn't happy and would be looking to depart if he didn't get sufficient minutes. So, look, since then, obviously, there was a fair bit of noise in the ensuing few days. It all went fairly quiet in the last couple of weeks, but certainly when you look at the body language of Cahill, you know, over the weekend and certainly the last home game, and he was out there signing autographs with the fans for a good half hour after the game and whatnot, you sensed that, you know, he knew that would be his last home game. So look, there's a lot of, a bit like the Ange Postecoglou exit, a lot of you know, questions, more questions than answers. But look, the long and the short of it is that Tim Cahill is desperate to get to Russia 2018, and he probably feels that he won't get sufficient minutes at Melbourne City to I guess, justify his claims of getting there. And Ange Postecoglou's exit has certainly thrown a spanner in the works.
The Herald Sun's David Davidovic is the man on the line, and we're on the news hour at the moment. It's George and Louise on FNR. And the question that Louise and I wanted to ask you earlier was that, is this as big a surprise for you as it was for everyone else this morning?
Well, yeah, I was shocked at the timing. I thought they were going to wait until January to, I guess, sever ties. And, you know, Tim would look to get, you know, a few more minutes under his belt. And, of course, he came on in, what, the 77th minute over the weekend. So I was surprised by, you know, the timing of it, but certainly not surprised by the fact that he has departed. So, yeah, look, it clearly, the relationship started really positively with him and Warren Joyce in the off-season, but somewhere along the line, I think he sensed that he probably wasn't part of the first team plans. May have been around the time that Ross McCormack, you know, signed as an injury replacement for Bruno Fornaroli, or perhaps, you know, in the ensuing weeks. But yeah, he clearly wasn't happy. There were clearly issues, you know, behind the scenes, and you know, he made that pretty evident in the post game interview with Fox Sports after Honduras. But thereafter, we haven't heard anything else from Cahill. We haven't heard a hell of a lot from the club. They've merely issued a statement today. Warren Joyce will obviously do the pre-game press conference on Saturday. I don't think he'll extend on it this a hell of a lot, to be honest. So I think, again, a bit like Ange, we'll be speculating and, yeah, probably won't find the smoking gun.
Dave, let's talk about the timing of this. We know that the transfer window in January doesn't open to, I think it's the 3rd. Do you think he's got another club now, or why now?
I don't. Well, you're correct. January 3 is when the A-League transfer window opens, so he can't. He certainly can't play for anyone until then. Similar story with the overseas transfer windows. Most of them open in around January, and of course the Asian and MLS seasons don't start until late February/March. So, why now? It's a difficult one to answer without having spoken to Timmy, but look, I suspect what he'll do, he'll go away, he'll freshen up.
Bit of a Christmas holiday with the family before it all starts again.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, just, you know, freshen up mentally and whatnot. But look, Timmy historically has, you know, he's moved around a fair bit over the last 2 years, and what he's done, he's worked, you know, really hard in terms of his you know, his fitness. But obviously when you don't play, it's not as demanding on the body. So I think he'll sort of freshen up and obviously hit the ground running come January, or perhaps a little bit later if he ends up signing in Asia or the MLS. So, look, there was clearly some tension there, clearly a lot of tension there. So once, you know, that became evident and he made his feelings known to the Melbourne City crew in the meetings that they would have had over the last couple of weeks, and vice versa, I think they probably both realised that it's best for both parties to move on. And I mean, the key in today's statement that Melbourne City issued was that it was a mutual termination. So you know, they haven't, you know, kicked him out, and he hasn't left without them obviously being Melbourne City being satisfied. So they've had negotiations behind the scenes, and they've come to a satisfactory resolution, as they say.
This is the FNR NewsHour, George Donikian with Louise Taffer, and we're talking to the Herald Sun's David Davidovic. If you want to put it a little bit differently, David, is it a case of Tim needing to get more game time, or a case of Warren Joyce trying to change and restructure the culture of the club ASAP as quickly as possible, with a view to making sure that when the window does open in January, if he needs to shed or move on players, he can do so, securing the knowledge he has the spots as well?
Yeah, George, all of the above, I reckon. Timmy clearly wants more game time, and Warren Joyce is clearly trying to change the culture of that club. So, you know, but as I said, like, if City wanted to get rid of him and Timmy didn't want to go, then he didn't have to go, and vice versa. He couldn't just walk without them, obviously, you know, releasing him. And my information was that they weren't going to let him go without a transfer fee in January. So some form of negotiation has taken place behind the scenes. So I think look, as I said, there's been tension there, and I think they've just both realised it's best we both move on. And for Tim, you know, why now? I guess for him, and there was an interesting line in the statement, which was the most telling part of it, his focus is on, you know, will now be on Russia 2018. So the key months for him will be March, April, May. He wants to time his run to perfection, and he's absolutely determined to get to Russia and make an impact. There's three players that have scored at four FIFA World Cup finals. Two of those are Miroslav Klose and a chap you may have heard of called Kalei. He is very, very eager to join that illustrious list. So that will be his focus now. That's why, you know, sitting out for 5 or 6 weeks now, having turned 38 today, by the way, is probably not going to be too detrimental to his chances.
That's right. It's his birthday today. Yes, 38. Now, we talked to...
Yeah, it would have been an interesting party, hey?
Yes, yes. We talked to Andrew Bernal earlier today about a host of different things, and he said to us, branding is so key in 2018 and beyond. And there's another classic example, as you just touched on, for Tim, again, to underline who he is, what he is, and what he could potentially put into his legacy and his CV.
How do you mean, George?
In that, if he goes to the World Cup and he does score, he's in elite company.
Yeah, spot on.
What a brand.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, he obviously... And every World Cup, he's done something amazing, hasn't he? Like 2006, you know, without his heroics against Japan, the Socceroos would have been... gone. 2010, you know, he mauled the Serbians in that game and gave the Socceroos a chance of getting, you know, through the next phase. I remember him, you know, leaping above Nemanja Vidic, who was in the prime of his career, playing for Manchester United at the time, and in 2014 scored that outrageous left-footed volley against the Dutch. So, you know, like, what I find amazing is that even today, like, some of the reaction to Tim Cahill, people saying he's got to give it up, you know, enough's enough. I mean, you know, who does he think he's kidding? 3-5 weeks ago, he scored a double against Syria, which, you know, without those goals, the Socceroos probably wouldn't be in the World Cup right now, although they certainly wouldn't be. So, you know, and that was with a real lack of minutes at the time with Melbourne City. So I don't even think he needs to. He doesn't to be playing 90 minutes every week. He just needs to be in and around the squad, playing at some level, and it doesn't even need to be at the highest level. He just needs to keep ticking over. His motivation and self-motivation and drive is so high that I'm convinced he will get himself up to a point where he will make an impact for the Socceroos at the World Cup, even if it's off the bench.
Dave, the next big question is... what's the best league for him to get some game time in?
Well, to extend on my last point, I think it's almost irrelevant. For him, it's what's most important is that he gets enough minutes to keep him ticking over, which is why I'm partly surprised he left Melbourne City. So even though he's been getting sort of limited minutes off the bench, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 type thing, he did start against Sydney FC, and I think now with this, you know, patch of games coming up without the FIFA international window, I think he actually would have been in with a chance of starting some games. Look, Tim Cahill may know something that I don't, but my read of it was that, you know, even though he probably wasn't part of Warren Joyce's first team plan, things can change pretty quickly. Injuries happen and whatnot. So, look, I guess he wasn't prepared to take that risk. And now I think he needs to find... It's a very unique situation. He now needs to find a manager and a club that is very understanding of his needs and requirements. And, you know, that would sort of bring into play one of his former coaches or someone that he knows quite well, even if he, you know, drops back a level and plays in a second division somewhere. I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world. As I said, I think he's just so driven and motivated, and he's got enough runs on the board, you know, at the age of 38 to just... He just needs to ensure that he's physically right to make the final 23-man squad for Russia.
We're talking to the Herald Sun's David Davidovich about the departure of Tim Cahill from Melbourne City. And it hasn't taken very long, David. A bunch of rumours now. The rumour mill is running, up and running. It looks like Timmy is being, as they say, courted by the Adelaide Reds.
Adelaide United, yeah. Well, they're the only club that sort of... I'm not sure whether they're on the record or not, but my information is that they have not ruled it out. So,
wow.
Look, to be honest, I can't see him signing for too many A-League clubs. Perth Glory, perhaps. Adelaide United, considering they've just released Karim Moore, you know, it's plausible. There's money in the cap. I think they've got the marquee spot open as well. I'm not sure how much of a motivator, you know, the financial side of it will be for Tim Cahill. But, yeah, it certainly makes sense. But to be honest, I can see him probably playing abroad.
Is the romantic person in the room is now saying, is there a chance he might play for the Blues? The Everton, go back. I've been seeing a lot of tweets out of the Tim Cahill machine. I'm just wondering.
What about West Ham?
Well, yeah. Was it West Ham?
Something Louise has just whispered. West Ham, David Moyes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he's got a good relationship with Moyes. You know, I've heard of... I mean, he's clearly not going to be a first 11 player in the Premier League week in, week out.
But what an impact.
You know, he can still make an impact. And I know a lot of people say that's ridiculous and fanciful, but, I mean, if he's doing it on the international scene for the Socceroos, then why couldn't he do it in the Premier League? So, it'd be amazing. But I'll tell you what, I would absolutely consider signing Cahill as a club, because his motivation levels, again, will be so high. And it's a big factor for... You know, for clubs, I mean, my understanding is that Tony Popovich is considering signing some Socceroos in the January transfer window.
Ooh, Karabükspor, Super League Turkey. Ooh.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think he will sign Tim Cahill, but along those lines, you know, he knows that the Aussie players, now they're qualified for the World Cup, will be highly motivated.
Sure.
So, you know, Timmy Cahill, he'll come in and make an impact wherever he goes.
David Davidovich, you've been a gem. Thank you very much for giving us the insight and also a bit of background and a sense of, you know, the character. You've met him a number of times. You also have seen him and worked with him, you know, player and reporter over the years when he's played for the Socceroos. And that background has certainly helped us to make better understanding of what went on today and what's happened.
Thanks, guys. Absolute pleasure, and you're doing a sterling job.
David Davidovich from the Herald Sun joining us there for the latest on what transpired this morning. Tim, of course, if you haven't heard it, and I don't know how you could have missed it, Louise broke the news very early on at FNR. Tim Cahill has left Bundoora. We'll take a break. Back with more very, very shortly.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. FNR News with George Danikian and Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is the News Hour live across Australia. George Danikian along with Louise Taffer.
Well, continuing on with the theme of vacancies in football, yesterday we heard that Melbourne Victory CEO Ian Robson announced his resignation from the club to take up a new role at Rowing Australia. We have the former chairman of Melbourne Victory, Jeff Lord, on the line. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on the FNR News Hour.
Thanks, Louise. You're probably ringing me up to ask me about the cricket, are you? The Aussies just got there. They just got them all out.
Fantastic. So they can come back and now listen to FNR. Thank you,
that's
Jeff.
Right.
Appreciate that update.
That's a sporting cross, George.
That's the way to do it.
Jeff, the news broke yesterday that Ian Robson has resigned from the CEO role at Melbourne Victory. Did that come out a bit of a surprise for you?
A little bit for me, but remember, I'm not on the inner circle anymore. But it's interesting to track Ian's history. He has had a number of assignments, and generally the length of tenure of those assignments is 3 or 4 years, and that's what he's done with Victory. I think his contract was due to expire in June next year, and he's probably considering his different options anyway. But his history has been to stay in one assignment for 3 or 4 years and then to move on. So in that sense, it's not a surprise. The timing was, I expected to be about mid next year.
You're listening to the FNR News Hour. It's Jeff Lord talking to us about the departure, or the imminent departure, of Ian Robson. He leaves on the 22nd of December. Jeff, what do you make of his legacy? If we review the last four and a half years, what are we to make of it? Is it going to be the championship? Is it going to be the way maybe he lifted the corporates to a level we hadn't had before? Or you tell us.
Yes. In fact, I know Ian reasonably well because he was at Hawthorn in my time at Hawthorn. But
this is before he went to Essendon. That's right. Yeah.
And then he went from Essendon to Victory. No, I don't think it's that. I don't think he created anything new. I think he built on where the club was. If you really think through the history of the club, which is now some 12 years old or so, a lot of those milestones were put in place. The corporate marketing, which was under Jimmy Christo, who's still there. The membership numbers, which were already over 20,000 when Ian came in. I think the on-field performance, which the groundwork was already laid there. I think what Ian did was build on those, and he leaves Victory in a very strong position, and has built and grown some of those building blocks to another level. So he's done his job, and from the club's point of view, I don't think the position will be too hard to fill. Hopefully they pick the right type of person who will continue to drive the club, but also this time round maybe exercise a few more initiatives for the club to build. There are a number of things I'd like to see the club do in the tenure of the next chief executive.
And just touching on that, Jeff, you had the responsibility for setting up Melbourne Victory. You understand the corporate nature of the business. You understand the football industry. What sort of qualities and credentials are needed right now to be CEO of Melbourne Victory?
Well, I think there's two phases in a way. One is that you want a good general manager, preferably with a sporting background. I don't think that needs to be a soccer background. But preferably with a sporting background, sporting administration background. And there are people around like Simon Lethlean, for example, who left the AFL.
Yep.
And there's Archie Fraser, who's been around and been involved in sport, and there are a number of other people you could quickly, names that you could quickly come to. But management at a chief executive level in a sporting body is a good background. That's phase one. Phase two, however, is to have some initiatives that help set the club up for the long term. And the two that I particularly would like to see is for Victory to build a base, a much stronger base in Asia through some network which enables it to be a bridge between Australia and Asia, and particularly China. And I think that's important in the next regime. And the other one, of course, is I believe the club could spread its involvement in sport. Now, that may be unusual to say, but I would like
not unusual
to see
overseas.
No, I'd like to see
the big clubs have half a dozen sports. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or something of that nature, and it's something that I wanted to do when I was there. Build it into a premier sports club as well as just a, you know, an outstanding football club. And so there's a few initiatives in that build in that next chief executive's time that I'd like to see the club undertake. There is a third element, but I think the board are in a position where they could handle most of it, but there's the interplay with the FFA and the changes that are going on, or the robust discussions which are going on at the moment about the structure of the FFA and the structure of the A-League. And they are important considerations for the new CEO. But I think the board are basically doing that themselves. I think Anthony's playing a role in that with people like Greg Griffin. And and so maybe the chief executive doesn't need to be too distracted by the political environment. So I'm saying, to answer your question, I'm saying that I think I'd be looking for a chief executive who can run professionally a good sporting organisation, but secondly, had enough initiative to build on a couple of fresh ideas to set the club up for the long term.
Jeff, how do you see the industry right now? Is it an attractive one to get involved with? Is it something you'd encourage investors to put their good money into, get the next A-League bid maybe for the new club to enter the competition?
Well, you're a smart man, George. You've been around a bit, and we all know what an astute investor you are.
Thank you.
Would have thought there was a time for a pause for an investor, because I think there's too much uncertainty as we sit here today. And the two biggest uncertainties, obviously, are the voting and the structure of the FFA and the ownership. Secondly, the ownership of the A-League. And those matters have to be resolved to give clarity to the clubs and to enable the clubs to work on the expectation of, for their financial outlook. So clubs need certainty, investors need certainty to understand those. And so I think they'd be sitting on the fence until the current arrangements are worked out. But having said that, once they're done, hopefully that's a positive for the game and a positive for the clubs from a financial point of view. However, there are some things that need to be done, and they've been, you know, widely discussed. I think the league needs new entrants. The league needs new excitement. So to do that, you probably are going to be forced into a promotion relegation system, and you're going to probably have at least 12 teams in there. We do need to build up the FFA Cup, with the knockout cup, and we do need to build up our club international playing roster. So I would like to actually see a couple of Asian clubs join the A-League. Now, that would be different, but that is the way to take it, the game, to another level. You've seen it probably with rugby union. It may not have worked that well there, but again, you're starting to see AFL clubs now, you know, particularly Port Adelaide, now trying to build a base in China. And I think we need to look outside the square. We definitely need New Zealand to stay in there. There's no way I would delete them from the makeup of the competition. But we need to internationalise it so that we get a team in from Singapore or Hong Kong or Japan or whatever, you know, and three or four teams. Failing to do that, you could have a competition, a one-off competition, which involves clubs from the Asian region. Now, you could say that's being done already with the Asian Cup, but I think you could have a more organised and
maybe wider
competition.
Reaching.
Yeah, I think that's where I'd be going. So there are, for providing people are not constrained in their thinking, which is a big question mark, but providing they're not constrained, I think there are a number of initiatives which would generate increased interest in the game in Australia.
You've left us with plenty to consider and plenty to think about. Geoff Lord, sure. The former chairman of Melbourne Victory, thank you very, very much for joining us on FNR. We trust you have a very good festive season, and thank you again for taking the time to answer
Thanks,
our call.
Thanks, George.
Pleasure.
Cheers. Bye.
All the best. We'll take a break. Back with more in just a moment.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. FNR News with George Danikian and Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, live across Australia, it's the News Hour, George and Louise. And just by the way, Louise, tonight at 7 o'clock, between 7 and 8, Tony Pignata and Michael Zappone will be actually talking to Ian Robson, the CEO from Melbourne Victory, who of course will be departing the club on the 22nd of December. So an opportunity to actually hear what's
Fantastic.
Going on from the horse's mouth. Okay, it's a very busy News Hour. We're going to cross live now to the Daily Telegraph's Tom Smithies. Good afternoon, Tom, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Always a pleasure to join you guys.
Now, very importantly, mate, you're at the ANZ Stadium, and there's a reason for that. There's a Sydney derby coming up. Huge match. What are the coaches saying?
Well, the coaches aren't here, but a whole bunch of the players are. I'm literally standing in the players' tunnel.
Are you standing in between them to keep them apart?
Oh, we were a bit earlier.
Oh, dear.
It's all good fun. We had a bunch of players here just to sort of try increase the atmosphere a bit and sort of drive home the message that it is the second derby of the season. There's an awful lot at stake for both teams. Obviously, Sydney FC top, but the Wanderers desperately trying to avoid a 17-point gap emerging, which is what it would be if they were to lose on Saturday. I don't know whether you can take this as some kind of omen, but this incredible hailstorm came across the stadium just as we were setting up, and now the sun's come out. So make of that what you will.
An omen, all right. You know, sometimes they say if you form, you're going through a bad patch of form, what you need is a derby to give you that little bit of something extra to perk up. Could this be it for the Wanderers? They've had a miserable start of the season.
Yeah, they had that moment last season, of course, and they were the only team to beat Sydney FC, and they did it here, and they did it through sheer grit and determination, and that's the sort of thing they're summoning up again. They're in a period of transition. The players are still talking about the need to get into Josip Gombau's new style, to playing out from the back far more than they did under Tony Popovich, taking more risks, all that kind of thing. But as Alvaro Fajudo said to me, we need a win. We just have to win. It doesn't matter how it comes. We play good football, we play bad football. We just need a win. They need that confidence that will come from that, let alone the 3 points. And, of course, the boost to knowing that they'll have kicked their cross-city rivals up the backside in the process. And, it's the perfect environment. You saw last season Brendan Santelab was in tears after the game, scored the winner. The second time he's done it in a derby, and you saw how much it meant to him. He could hardly speak after the game. He was so spent from all the emotion and the energy. And that's what they'll be summing up again on Saturday night.
Tom, it's Louise here. How have the ticket sales been for this big match?
Well, they're looking, if the weather's decent and all the usual caveats with Australian football, there'll be around 40,000 hopefully, which...
That's a healthy start.
I think it's a healthy... For around, what are we, nine... middle of the season derby between two teams, one of whom is not doing particularly well, and it's their home game. I think we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. We were spoilt last season with 60,000 for the opening round, setting all the records, and we kind of thought that's the new normal. Well, it isn't. You know, there was an awful lot of work went into that. It was the opening round of the season. Both teams were full of promise, and it turned into a great event. We got about just under 40 at Allianz for the first game of the season, and I think in the context of an A-League that is, let's be honest, struggling a little to excite people, I think if they get up to 40,000, that'll be look good. 40 in Allianz, of course, looks amazing. Here at ANZ, where it's 82, it'll look half full, but you know the TV cameras will be pointing down, so it'll still be a good atmosphere. It always is with the the Wanderers fans and Sydney FC fans when they come together and try and out-tifo each other with those enormous banners at the start of the game.
Oh, those tifos look fantastic. We're talking to the Daily Telegraph's Tom Smithies, and it would be remiss of both of us to let you go if we don't ask you what in heaven's name is going on. What happened this morning? Tim Cahill left Melbourne City. You would have thought that was the ideal mix.
Well, there's been all of this stuff coming out in the last few days or last few weeks. First, starting with Timmy saying that he needed more game time after the Socceroos got through to the World Cup, and just enough stories dripping out about the breakdown of his relationship with the coach. Then you see the assistant coach going. Clearly, the club are backing the coach here. They're backing Warren Joyce to put a broom through the place, and he's decided that Tim Cahill is expendable. Cahill wanted more game time, wanted to leave. There are all sorts of financial discussions and so forth, which I think took place over the last few days. But the end result is that he's gone somewhere, and all the indications are that we don't know where he's going. We don't know what his plans are, but he's sort of gambling that he'll find a team in time to have a good second half of the season and, you know, cruise through to Russia 2018.
Tom, I'm going to ask you a question. We're hearing a whole lot of scuttlebutt, a few rumours here and there, that there are 4, 5, 6 possible places where Tim Cahill may land. Do you have any insight into where he might land next?
I wish I did. I think you can speculate it. His reputation in China wasn't helped by, you know, the two stints that he had there. I mean, as a professional, he's fine, but he just didn't score that many goals. You can't imagine him going back to somewhere like the English Premier League, not at 38. The MLS, possibly. But he's, wherever he goes, he's got a little period of time on his hands now, because he's a player who was in contract during the last transfer window, so he can't go anywhere until the transfer window opens.
Yep. Is Asia or the United Arab Emirates a possibility?
Yeah, well, the UAE window opens next week. So, yes, that is a possibility. But, of course, we're just talking theoretically here. He'll need to go somewhere where he's going to be playing more often than not. Somewhere like England, he'd be playing too much, ironically. he wouldn't be able to cope with it.
What about Millwall? Somewhere, could he go back to Millwall?
They'd love him, wouldn't they?
Wouldn't they? Perfect
ending. I mean, you never. And the thing with Tim, I've learned over the years, is you never say never. You never say he can't do this. Mm. You never say he won't. He'll score 50 goals. He'll never score 50 goals. You never say he can't keep going, because he just turns around and keeps doing it. And, you know, we've had all sorts of jousts with us journalists over the years, and he sort of gets motivated by people writing him off.
He loves the narrative too, doesn't he?
Absolutely. And why not? I mean, the guy is a national hero, and if he has, he likes to pick up stuff that we've written about him and remind us of it. But he's the guy who keeps scoring the goals and sends Australia to the World Cup at 38. You know, it's an extraordinary story of longevity in a sporting career, and judging by Tim's history to date, it ain't over yet.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
And Tom, before we let you go, what are your Sydney Derby predictions?
Come on, be bold, Tom.
People ask me for tips. If I was any good at tipping, number one, I'd be rich. Number two, I wouldn't be down the bottom of the Telegraph tipping panel. But
that's an aberration, Tom. Don't let it get to you. Be positive. Take a leaf out of Tim Cahill's book.
Top of FNR's tipping panel.
I'm going to go for a draw, and that's not fence sitting. It's simply down to the fact that they just run each other into a standstill. And I know it was 4-0 in the opening game last season, but those goals mostly came late in the game, and when the Wanderers sort of fell apart a bit. So I think unless one team gets an early goal and runs loaded, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
All right. The Daily Telegraph's Tom Smithies has declared it. It's, as far as he's concerned, the Sydney Derby is going to be a draw. There you go. Thank you, Tom. Really appreciate you joining us and giving us not only a bit of background of the derby, but your thoughts on what has been an intriguing development this morning, especially when word got out very quickly from Bundoora that Tim Cahill, who's celebrating his birthday today of all things, has called it a day, and he and the club have mutually agreed to go their own ways.
Yep, absolutely. Huge day in football, and a pleasure to share it with you.
Thank you very much, Tom. All the very best. Well, there you go, Louise. We've covered a full hour, and we've got one more thing. What is it?
Yes, just before we go, the Asian Champions League
the draw tonight.
Is tonight at 7:30, and the Matildas will also learn their opponents.
Okay, so Calcio Cafe will have all the details tomorrow morning?
I'm sure Carlos will.
And there's even a chance that Pinata and Zapponi might add to it with their show, The Bosses, tonight, where they're talking to Ian Robson. Time for us to go.